Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Podfather. My name is Alex.
And my name is Jordan, coming to you from COVID-19 land. Because last time we recorded, things hadn't gotten as bad, had they?
No, that was at least 2 weeks ago. And we were in the same room. And now we're resorting to techniques that we used when we were in different countries.
Yeah.
Although we are only like a couple kilometers away.
Yeah. So we won't be doing Arnott's time. But that's okay. We're just going to pretty much talk about the movie today, I think.
Well, I think you should have a bit of an announcement before that. You've recently been up to some creative projects that you might want to let all three listeners know about.
Absolutely. So if you head to Facebook, I've got a music page up. We're going to start putting some songs out. We were going to start gigging around now, but obviously we can't. So we're going to put some stuff online. Some stuff's already up there. The page is Jord. If you go to facebook.com/songsbyJord, you'll be able to find it. And give us a like, give us a follow, and when this is all over, come to the gigs. It's going to be really fun.
Oh, amazing. Congratulations, Jord.
Thank you. And Alex is on board as well. He's part of the band. And you know, just another nice little creative endeavor for us, and it's going to be good fun, I think, and gotten positive feedback so far, I have to say.
Oh, that's really great to hear. That's awesome. I'm glad to be a part of it. Do you think it'll be more successful than The Podfather?
Oh, absolutely. But only because people go out. Well, people did. Hopefully they will again, you know, go out to listen to music. They don't go out to listen to
in the before times
podcasts.
Very, very true. When it's all back to normal, there'll be gigs, hopefully. There'll be lots of gigs. There'll be big moves happening.
Yeah. It is exciting. I'm really excited. We're going to be I might be a pop icon. You never know.
Perfect Blue, it is an animated, Japanese animated anime film from 1997 from a guy called Satoshi Kon. I think it's his first film, I believe. He's done like 4 or 5. And this is going to probably be, depending on whether Jordan liked this movie or not, I'd like to watch another one of his films next week. So we're doing a little bit of an anime dive because we haven't done any anime at all, which is really exciting for me because I love anime. We did do a Japanese film called Outrage once. So we're going to sort of follow up that line of thinking. I first found out about it when I was working at the cinema because I saw a picture on the program and I was like, that looks cool. But I missed it in the cinema, so I ended up watching it at home. And quite frankly, it blew me the fuck away the first time I watched it. And I would like to stress...
Did it perfect blew you away?
It perfect blew me away. I want to stress... obviously, we always, you know, spoil films and we just talk and talk and talk. So as we've said many times before, if you haven't seen the film, don't listen to this. Or if you don't mind being spoiled, that's fine. But this is one of those films that I think, you know, you can only really see it once. And then, you know, once you sort of know, obviously it's nice to watch again, and this was the second time that I've watched it, but please watch it before you listen to us spoil it all.
Yeah, I'm really glad you chose it, to be honest.
Did you enjoy it, first impression?
Well, first impression was, you know, it's unlike most movies that I watch. I don't watch a lot of anime, although I do watch a lot of, you know, more Western animated movies and even adult, like themed animated movies on occasion too. But there's something really interesting about watching something, you know, that at least from my experience, you know, like I think Pokemon or whatever when I think of the particular animation style. Or, you know, Studio Ghibli or something like that.
Yeah, well, quickly, what actually is your sort of experience with anime, given that it's, I guess, maybe small?
It's very small.
What is your catalogue?
My catalogue is really nothing. Like, I don't watch a lot of it at all. I haven't seen any of the Studio Ghibli films yet, apart from a bit of Spirited Away. what else? Oh, like, and things like Pokemon and stuff, I wasn't allowed to watch them as a child. I don't know why, but I wasn't. So,
wow, yeah, Pokemon's
it's really,
really
peripheral.
Raunchy. Nurse Joy, man, Nurse Joy. Wow.
So yeah, I don't really have that much of a history with it myself. But it's just, you know, it's like a cartoon. I just think of flicking through, you know, the channels on the Saturday morning.
Mm.
And seeing, you know, kids action shows where it's like, you know, like the movie starts, with that little, you know, like the Power Rangers situation that's going on. And they're like, what, you know?
Yeah. Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I first watched this film for the first time and it starts off with, yeah, like Power Ranger people, I was like, is this the right movie? Yeah. I was like, what am I watching? Am I watching what I think I'm watching, or am I watching some, yeah, Power Rangers thing or something like Power Rangers? So that's quite funny that you said that. And look, I think it's interesting, and this is why, I mean, this is honestly, this is probably like a hardcore one to start with.
Mm.
But it's probably a good one to start with, being your first proper anime, I guess, because it does show you quite quickly that this is not Pokemon. And I think that that's, you know, the West has always enjoyed things like Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z, Sailor Moon, things like that, which were always kids' shows anyway, and they translated quite well. But there's a lot of things like this that we didn't really get as much of, or it wasn't as popular outside of Japan. It's only starting to, probably in the last 5-10 years since in the internet and Twitter fucking loves anime, that these things are becoming a bit more widespread, I think. And it's good because, it, you know, anime didn't necessarily start out as being for kids, whereas in the West, most of our animation sort of had its roots in children's content, I think, sort of, you know, a bit more so than maybe in Japan. Japan was able to use animation in many different ways, I think, a lot earlier than maybe we were, if that makes sense. So, you know, the more adult...
Certainly in mainstream.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a weird film to talk about, like, in terms of, I guess the plot is that it's, you know, I mean, it's a psychological thriller, which is something that we're delving into a bit now. But it sort of starts as just, you know, hey, I'm quitting the band. What's her name? Mima. Quitting her band, Cham. And she wants to be an actress. And, you know, it's like, oh, cool. Pretty straightforward plot there. But then things start to go awry. And, you know, her life pretty much crumbles before her eyes. And there's, or does it? We're not sure. For a lot of the film, you're sort of wondering what is reality and what, and I guess that's because it is animated, they're able to do things that you couldn't do in a live action movie, which really heightens this sense of what's going on, where am I, who am I, that the film is, you know, those are the questions that the film poses to us. Very expertly, I think.
Well, and that's another reason why I wanted to watch it now, was because we watched Mulholland Drive last week. And I think, I don't know if anyone has compared these two films. I don't know if you should. I'm not a film scholar. But when I watched Mulholland Drive, it made me think about this movie, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And especially after our discussion about Mulholland Drive and some of those things that you said, you know, maybe the things that didn't land as much for you in Mulholland Drive that clearly already have landed for you in this film. That's why I thought it was good to kind of look at them and compare them, because I think there is some similarities, because Mulholland Drive does try to bring up the same sort of, you know, what's reality, when's happening, what's happening. And obviously David Lynch has the surrealist thing going on in the physical world, and sometimes with some awkward green screen CG. Whereas in this film, obviously, I think, yeah, there's no doubt that you can make it confusing far easier because of the animation, right? Like, you can kind of edit and cut in different ways and show different things because it's all just drawn. You can just make it up. There's no trickery going on because it's all fake anyway.
Yeah, and I was watching it, and people have made this comparison before, but I don't know. I think we were talking about this. You've not seen Black Swan, have you?
Oh, no, I haven't.
But people have sort of said that Darren Aronofsky, you know, used this film to inspire Black Swan. He says he didn't. But there are similar themes in terms of, you know, being an artist and really doing demanding things for your art, and then are people out to get me? That's kind of similar.
Yeah, right.
Thematically. But and that movie's really quite intense as well. But I don't know, this movie kind of fucked my head a little bit in a way that I don't think it would have as much had I been watching the same story in live action.
Well, and, you know, I think for me personally, and this is why I'm excited that you've enjoyed it, and I hope that you can watch more anime, because a lot of that does somewhat come down to just the depth at which anime exists on, you know, not as much with Pokemon and stuff, but like these kind of films, like it's in the way they draw things. It's in the way that they, you know, write the music for it. It's in the way that they, you know, sometimes it's so still because they just leave it the frame as is for like, you know, 10 frames. They don't animate anything sometimes for that period of time. And sometimes that's budgetary, but sometimes that's also part of the style.
Yeah.
And they recreate, I mean, if you've ever been to, there's this weird thing with anime where if you've ever been to Japan or Tokyo and you see them draw Shibuya or something in an anime, I mean, it's almost better than a photo, and it does do the same thing that a photo does. You think to yourself, I've been there. Even though it's all drawn, like it's and what I like about it with anime is that like it's not like super realism, like classical painting realism, you know, like a landscape of a boatyard where it all looks like really, really real. It's an art style, but it still has this level of depth and realism to it. Do you know what I mean? Like it's own style, but it's, you know,
and the environments are often, you know, semi-realistic, and you can tell, like, you know, a building looks like a chair looks like a chair, and a bed looks like a bed, in a way that, you know, you don't have to do in animation. But then the faces are can be so stylized, like the villain in this thing, what's his name? I can't remember.
Oh, I can't remember his name. But Moran or something. His moniker.
His eyes are drawn like really far apart, you know?
Well, and that's actually one of the things that I like about this particular anime is, first of all, it's not too, for lack of a better term, you know, Sailor Moon-y. Like, it's not got the big googly eyes and stuff like that. It's a bit more refined.
But it does in bits, like the Cham sequences and the outfits are reminiscent of that, and I think to great effect.
No, yeah, 100%. And they sort of cut between the more realistic and the more that sort of more fantasy vibe within it all. But again, and now I'm going on another little tangent, you know, it's so good because that the pop idol thing and that storyline, I mean, that it was real in the 90s, and it's so real now as well in you know, Japan and Korea. Those kind of things exist.
Well, even in Western culture, with someone like, you know, Miley Cyrus or even Taylor Swift and people like that, Ariana Grande, like there is this very much, It's a universal thing where young women, particularly pop stars, childhood, you know, teen idols, then want to be taken seriously as artists. And the way to do that, is by sexualizing oneself sometimes. And that's often what happens and still does happen.
And, yeah, and there's a lot of pressures from their management and the industry, and that's what this film does really well, is it shows you that, and then it also does a lot of time spent showing you what the fans are saying about it. And obviously that leads into the main premise, which is that there's a stalker about, but it's sort of surprisingly honest about, I suppose, what people actually say about these idols, right? I mean, even the people who aren't creeps are actually kind of creepy with what they say and the way they follow them and what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? I think we're all guilty of that, really, at the end of the day. And it's actually really unfair, because once you're famous, at least to the common person like us, you know, there's that layer of untouchability, which makes people like us, you know, we have a film podcast and we go around and talk about how Quentin Tarantino likes feet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's so rude because maybe he doesn't like feet.
Oh, he definitely
does.
I'm
sure he does. And, you know, I'm not saying that we should necessarily stop doing that because that'd be hypocritical because I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you should at least understand that for what it is and understand that it is kind of unfair. And you should stop yourself before you say things that are, you know, just mean about famous people. Just because they're famous doesn't mean you should, you know, follow them in that way. Mm.
And also, not only just being unkind, it also, this film really deals with the fact that we feel like we own these people. It's not just about saying things. It's about how we feel ownership over someone's personality, that someone's style, also particularly with women, their bodies. And that's still certainly – that's a prevalent thing as much now as it was in the 90s and forever in history, and maybe even more so now than it was, because this movie touches on sort of the birth of the internet and in its infancy. Yeah. But those things have only been exacerbated, I think, this whole I think the access to pornography that society has now has done its part to sort of break down that sort of, you know, it's all free. You can look at anyone's naked body whenever you want to, and then I feel like that very easily just extends into pop culture itself. And it's kind of scary and kind of dangerous and really fucked up. And this film does a really, really good job, for the most part, of like distilling that sense of creepiness and danger into a fun little 90-minute feature.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. A fun little romp. it's interesting because I think it particularly, so one of the main storylines, and I guess we'll start to now delve into the plot a little bit, is that she ends up finding out about this website called Mima's Room, which is like a fan page, but it starts off as a fan page and then it very quickly turns into a stalker page where whoever's writing the website is documenting as much about her as is possible and kind of doing it from her point of view, so it's very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously throughout the film she goes on this website more and more, as you would. And what's interesting about that is, like, it was a little bit humbling to see that again because this is only 23 years ago, which I guess is a long time. I don't know anymore. You know, it's hard to tell.
I think February was 23 years ago, wasn't it?
I really hate it when you give me one that I don't get straight away.
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, time isn't just an illusion.
Exactly. It really is. And, you know, it was humbling to see this more basic thing of the internet, because one of the things that I thought, I was like, oh, you know, if you're a celebrity today, I mean, finding a website like that, A, wouldn't be surprising. Mm-hmm. B, like, you probably wouldn't even stop to think about it. See, back then, like, I was thinking about it and I was like, these days, you know, every photo is just available. But back then, I mean, if you saw photos of you that you didn't know were taken, that would be weird. But these days, if you saw photos of you that you didn't know were taken as a celebrity, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously that sucks, but it's more like, I mean, I guess that's always been part of being a celebrity, but it's more like the access to it. Like, it used to be maybe you saw something printed in the tabloid and you were like, oh, I can't believe they got that photo of me, whatever. That sucks. This paparazzi are fucked. But, like, what I'm trying to say is now it's just a different dynamic where it's just like you have to kind of understand that all that's already out there all the time ready to go, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I guess that doesn't make it any, you know, less fucked as well. Like, particularly,
it doesn't make it any less fucked, and that's the problem.
Remember the royal family when nudes of Kate Middleton were taken or something? Do you remember that?
Oh no, I haven't seen those.
A super long lens, and there was a big stink, obviously, as you can imagine. But shit like that happens, or like there were photos that went around of I can't remember who it was, and I probably shouldn't even say, but
there was the big iCloud leak and stuff like that.
And that stuff too. Yes, exactly. And it's kind of like, that's exactly what we're talking about. This sort of ownership, like this entitlement that society seems to have over these, really they're people, and sure, they might in some ways lead very privileged lives, but at the end of the day, they're still people, and they still no one deserves that.
Yeah, and it's just that, it's that feeling of like, especially when I see people younger than me, the way that they interact with the internet and stuff like that, I think that there's this real, you know, it's already happened to us probably. I think it's happening to people who are younger than us.
Mm-hmm.
There's this lack of care for privacy, I think, is the point that's happened.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to contrast that to then where, you know, seeing her access this website and stuff, it just made me think about how we're really moving in this direction where not only is it people are like caring about it less, I think. And I guess on one hand, sure, if you don't care, then it doesn't matter. But we probably should care more. I think this is a complicated thing that's going to come to sort of be a bit more of a deal over the next decade or so, in the 2020s.
But before we get on to what will happen, let's talk about what does happen in this movie, because it is kind of hard to explain, and we're sort of dancing around the plot of this movie because it sort of jumps, and I actually don't know how much of the movie is real or not, but she does this TV show, and then there's like, it's like a murder mystery TV show kind of situation, but then murders are happening outside of the TV show, and you're not sure who's doing them or if they're really happening, and she keeps waking up in bed and there's blood and there's, what's reality?
So, and it's funny that I'm watching this for the second time because I obviously knew what happened, and so, you know, I was a little bit more watching it with the I can't be fooled eyes, and there was still one or two moments where I was like, oh, yeah, that was such a good scene. Like, that really even now fooled me again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because, you know, you weren't having a bar of that with Mulholland Drive. You know what I mean? Like, you were just like, nah, it's this, it's clear, fucking, you know, la la la, they're different people, blah, 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 blah. And then with this movie, you're like, oh my God, I don't know. Was she waking up there, or was it in the show, or was it real, or la la? It's just refreshing to hear you be bewildered.
Well, I guess so. And you know what? But I think it's a testament to the fact that David Lynch made it up as he went along, whereas this movie clearly thought it out very well, because it has to be thought out when you're making a drawing.
You're right. It's funny. I think animations do sometimes have – it's inherently a bit more intentional, isn't it? Because when you're shooting a film, especially someone like David Lynch, yeah, you get the impression that he's – got that artistic license, and sometimes there's a bit of improvisation in films and stuff, and things get rewritten along the way. But with an animation, it's pretty much all in the can before it's drawn, right, in a way. Like, they're kind of ready to go, and then they just kind of create it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? It reminded me a little bit of, I think it's like season 4 or 5 of BoJack Horseman. He is in a TV show, and because he's like drinking all the time, you're sort of not sure. And the set of the show looks like his real house. And because it's animation, you're never really quite sure if he's in the TV show, if he's just himself. And it was a really, really good season. I recommend it actually to anybody. But
the whole season was like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where, because it's animation, and actually there was a stop motion animation film that came out a few years ago that I loved called Anomalisa, and that had some really fucked things in it visually as well, because you just got the freedom to take people on like a narrative journey that you can't otherwise do. And I think for me, that's why this movie works so well, with the whole did it happen, didn't it happen, because literally characters can transform in front of your very eyes, but it's part of the story, it's baked in, you know what I mean? It's not, there's nothing that they're doing just cause, they've really thought this through.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I guess I'll kind of go through the story a bit, and I want to see at what points you were confused. So the long short of it is, you know, she's a pop idol, like we said, she's going to become an actress. She finds this website. She also starts to star on this TV show. There's a stalker involved, a tall, weird dude. And I think the first thing you think in this film is, oh, yeah, it's that stalker. He's fucking with her, right? So did you think that at first? Oh, yeah, you know, this guy's going to be fucking with her. That's weird and creepy. This is going to be a stalker film.
Yeah.
That's weird. And so it sets it up for that. And then as she goes on the TV show more, like you said, people start to get killed surrounding her real life or maybe real life. Mm-hmm. And then there's this weird thing that happens, actually, speaking of writing things along the way. There's this weird thing that happens inside the film in the TV show where I feel like they sort of rewrite a little bit on the way because the writer gets killed, right, while it's in production. So there's this, you know, along the same time that she's having trouble dealing with being now an actress, having a stalker that she's sort of trying to not admit is actually happening, although she probably kind of knows it's happening, being forced into doing rape scenes and then, like, nude photography because, like you said, this is what happens to people, unfortunately, in the industry. She then starts to, I suppose, really get depressed and reserve into herself, and they do this sequence where it's, like, day by day she's waking up and you're not quite sure what's happening. And then there's that moment where they cut to the TV show and she wakes up and she says, I'm Mima, blah, blah, blah. And then they use the actors from the TV show to say, oh, you know, yeah, she's got dissociative personality disorder. This is one of her personas.
Mm-hmm.
Did you then think then that it was all in the show for a moment or something?
I guess I didn't know and it didn't really matter to me what the answer was, because that was the whole point, was that you weren't supposed to know at that point, I think. Because they had the same scene, twice, but using different names and things like that.
And then after that, it sort of takes you into, I suppose, the end sequence where you sort of get the final reveal about what's going on. And I guess it's just like a really good it's a bit of a double whammy twist, isn't it, at the end of the day, this whole film?
Yeah. Which
it's a really good idea, I think, because it goes from normal stalker plot to like, oh, is it maybe actually a TV show inside the film, or is she, you know, actually she's crazy, or is she actually murdering the people? But it turns out to be her assistant or agent or whatever, who's one of her close friends, who basically is actually delusional and thinks she's her.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a stalker plot, but it's not the one that you thought. Boom.
Boom. Yeah, and that was a really good ending, because I was like, are they just going to leave it open-ended? Which would be actually fine, to be honest. I wouldn't have been mad. It's just I liked that. I liked how it had like an ending. I like that sometimes, you know.
Yeah, more so than Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Fuck Mulholland Drive. This is the sort of movie that I like, because it's not just weird for the sake of being weird. It's, you know, it's psychological and it is off the wall a little, but then at the end of the day, it's still using. It still adheres to narrative structure, even if it's breaking it. Whereas, and I don't want to keep shitting on Mulholland Drive, but I'm going to. Whereas that was just clearly no thought. It wasn't. I don't think the craftsmanship in that movie is very good narratively.
I think you're right. You put it really well. Like, this does bend the rules, but it keeps it all within a structure. It does have a beginning, middle, and end. It does have a through line, and it has good twists, and it does make sense. And you can probably debate certain aspects and certain scenes, but, you know, it's easier to come up with whatever your interpretation is. It has a lot of parallels within itself. Like, it's much more self-contained, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whilst still pushing boundaries, asking questions,
but it's,
you know,
really
critiquing
well crafted
society
in every way, like on a storytelling level, because it does break the rules, which is important. And I'm not saying that every story should just be three act structure and, you know, a climax in the middle and, you know, a resolution. No, because that's boring, but it knows those rules to break them, and so it's crafted really well. because it takes you down the path and you go, oh, I know this story. I know how this goes.
His next film, actually, a film called Millennium Actress, which is it's like not a spoiler to say this. It's a similar sort of thing. It's not a similar film, but it's all kind of taking place where these guys come to interview this actress when she's like 80,
mm-hmm.
and basically they're interviewing her, and throughout the interview about her life, it then basically does flashbacks and takes you through her life. So it's a similar kind of thing where it's like you forget what's happening. Like, am I watching her life or am I listening to them in the room interviewing? Like, it does that, you know, that sort of jumping around of what's actually relevant and what's happening. Okay. And like you said, that's easier to do in animation, I guess. But also, I don't know, just like really satisfying and a really good way to tell a story. Like, when you forget, I like that in a story, when you forget what's really, I guess Tarantino's a bit like that. There's that really long flashback in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where you forget at what moment you're actually in the movie, you know, like the Bruce Lee thing, you know, like you forget where you are in the film because you're so locked in on another part of it that's still relevant, but in the same timeline, you know what I mean? All that stuff. Yeah, it's a good film.
It's a really good film. I'll be thinking about it, and it was a really disturbing film as well. And I think if it was live action, maybe it would be too disturbing. But because, you know, it's just, you know, lines on a page, it somehow makes it simultaneously more disturbing because someone's taken the time to really draw those sort of voyeuristic naked pictures.
That's true.
However, it's also much less disturbing than if it was real nudity. I'm not sure how I would feel. You know what I mean? And they can also be more stylized with the violence, and it can be really visceral. But you wouldn't necessarily show that in a live action movie and have the same result. It might just be too much of a turn off. You know. Yeah, things to think about.
Yeah, and I was going to say before, actually, because you mentioned that the stalker guy is sort of drawn, I guess, grotesquely,
mm-hmm.
and it's interesting. It sort of happens a bit too with Rumi is her name, who ends up being Mima in disguise with her personality disorder. And there's that great moment where, like, Mima sees her as herself, except in the mirror kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and you can kind of see the weirdness. And this particular anime is drawn in a kind of reserved way, because typically with anime, I mean, again, you take the more kids stuff, I mean, they're really good at drawing bad guys or monsters and stuff like that are really big and gross looking and you know, very stylized and obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I like about this film, because they draw on, you know, they make the stalker guy look a bit like a monster, but he still looks like a person. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's that sort of grotesque look that he has. And you don't get that, I guess, with real people as much, because, I don't know, like, ugly people don't get on Hollywood movies, I guess. I don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
no, I know exactly what you mean. And that's why, you know, to talk about films we've watched recently, something like Uncut Gems or Good Time, where the Safdie brothers cast really fucking ugly people, you know, like interesting looking people. And that's what real life is like. So, you're right. It's kind of refreshing and interesting.
And it's not that people look like that guy, the stalker guy, but there's this element of, I guess, he's more threatening than, like, if you cast Brad Pitt as a stalker, mm-hmm. he's not going to give that same vibe, because, you know, he's beautiful, right? And it's like, I think what's good about the way they draw the stalker is it's not just that they're drawing, I don't know, an ugly person or whatever, but it's like they're drawing, like, what you're mind thinks of when they think of someone like that who would do those things,
mm-hmm.
and that comes through in the character design,
yeah.
and you can't always that doesn't always come through when you're casting real people, right? You know, that's probably the challenge of casting, is to kind of get someone who brings a vibe.
Who brings a vibe. Absolutely. Mm. I'm just thinking...
More than just acting, it's about the vibe.
Yeah, it's about the vibe. I'm just thinking about this movie. Like, I was telling you yesterday, so I watched the first half. Oh, and I watched it with the subs, not dubs. That's important too.
We should have said that much earlier. Please watch foreign films with subtitles. Yeah. Don't watch it with dubs. I was a naughty boy. I watched the dubs last night, actually. They weren't too bad. They were all right, but, you know, it's better to watch subtitles.
Yeah. I'm glad I watched it with subs. But, oh, yes, I watched it in two halves. I actually saw the version I was watching was on YouTube. And it was actually already in two halves. And so I watched the first half and then I had to have a phone call because I'm just on the phone all the time these days at work and not at work. And it was almost – it because it's not a very long movie. It was almost like watching it as a
– like a series.
You know, like a two-part mini-series, yeah, which wasn't actually a bad thing, to be honest. And where I stopped watching was – when they, it was like, you're going to have to do this rape scene. And then that's more or less where it stopped. And that's really where the film takes a turn. So even though I tend not to like to do that when I'm watching movies, it actually turned out to not be the worst part of the film to watch it in, to stop watching it, you know?
Yeah, no, I get you. And it didn't bother you with the subtitles? Because something that some people say, particularly with anime, is that they don't want to watch subtitles because obviously they want to see the beautiful drawing and animation, which I do sympathise with. But, you know, even subtitles sometimes have got interesting translations that don't actually match what is being said.
That's true. And it's kind of funny. Like, there was one lyric in one of their songs that was, "I have finally found a luxurious loneliness." And you know what? That really hit home with me because that's sort of what everyone has found in this time of our life, a luxurious loneliness in our time of isolation. So, I don't know what the, you know, if someone else had translated that lyric, if maybe I would have responded to it differently.
Maybe that's a good song title for you.
Luxurious Loneliness.
Oof. Yeah, it could be a number one hit.
Like, you get ready. Triple J unearthed. no, but back to subs real quick is, you know what, I think, you know, 10 minutes into a movie with subtitles, you forget you're even reading them. Like, and, you know, we went and saw, I'm trying to think the last thing we would have seen together that had subs, and it would have been probably Pain and Glory, right?
Yes.
And that's a beautifully shot movie, a lot of things happening in the frame, but you don't feel like you're missing anything just because you're reading the subs.
No, and it's, yeah, I mean, look, the Podfather recommends everyone learn to deal with it, and you do get used to it, 100% you do.
And, like, if you go to the fucking opera, oftentimes they'll have subs at the opera, and they're not as close to the action as it is on the screen. So count yourself lucky.
Where are the subtitles at an opera?
Like, the one time I went to the opera, I was in Vienna, and I went to the opera for like 10 euro, standing room. And wow. The subs were on like the rail.
Like on like a screen?
Yeah, a tiny little screen. They were on like a rail that was at my like waist height essentially. But if they had been seats, they would have been a bit closer, I suppose. But so you could understand what they were singing about.
Why would it be hard to understand? Because opera has such a sort of weird voicing or something?
No, because it was in another language.
Oh, right. So it was actually for you. It was like English subs.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really kind of
them. So I knew sort of what the hell I was watching. As opposed
to... I didn't expect that they would do that.
You know, like, that's all nice and beautiful, but I don't know what the plot is, you know?
I think it's also really... like, you can't learn all the languages, but it helps a little bit sometimes to know some basic words in Japanese or French or Spanish or Italian when you're watching these films, because you can sometimes I don't know, you're not going to understand all of it, but sometimes if it's as simple as them saying hello or yes or whatever, you can kind of just hear it sometimes, which can be a bit helpful because sometimes they'll sort of insert words and stuff, especially with anime. I find it sometimes like they might just say one word and then they kind of insert more in the subtitle than is actually there. And if you understand a little bit of the language, you can go, oh, they didn't actually say that. Okay. Yeah. So it's good to look out for that stuff too. Because sometimes it's not only translated, sometimes it's kind of somewhat localized to try and appeal to a certain audience, which I kind of detest that because then you're kind of changing the creative license of the film. And often that's done by a distributor rather than by the original producers. So keep that in mind, especially with anime. Keep that in mind if you're watching.
Well, there's one animated feature that comes to mind when you're talking about that, which is Shark Tale. And in Shark Tale, is it Shark Tale?